70 souls migrated from Canaan, traveling down to Egypt because of a global famine, there was no way for them to have known that their families would live in Egypt for 400 years. And though Egypt had been a place of prosperity and security, it turned into a place of struggle and suffering. And while dwelling there, Israel went from being most favored nation status to being a pariah among the people of Egypt. It happened when a new pharaoh came into power who did not know Joseph. The new pharaoh, according to Exodus chapter 1 and verse 14, made Israel's lives bitter with hard bondage, in mortar, in brick, and in all manner of service in the field. All their service in which they made them serve was with rigor. But Israel didn't perish under the hand of the taskmaster. As a matter of fact, while in Egypt, those 120 souls grew to be a mighty nation, even numbering 1,200,000 men of fighting age between the age of 20 and 60 when they left the land of Egypt. What might it have been that determined that the place where they lived was either a land of bondage or a land of opportunity and growth? We don't live in Egypt today. We're not making bricks. Our lives are not full of bitter bondage, but there is a heavy load that might be on our backs that we carry from day to day. We might perceive the trials that we face as being bitter bondage, the income taxes, the medical expenses, real estate obligations, sales taxes, inflated cost of groceries and energy and automobiles. And did I say income taxes? You get the point. For some people, no matter where they live, it's always going to be the land of bondage. All they ever see is gloom, despair, and deep, dark depression and excessive misery. They never get a break. And when something good happens, they're sad because they know it's just a matter of time when it's going to be taken away. Even with good health, a good family, trustworthy friends, a secure job, and a good home, life for some people can seem to be bleak and oppressive and a heavy load to bear. They always look down and expect the worst. But in the same place where they live, there are others who find opportunity and blessing and joy and contentment. It seems that the greater the adversity, the greater the opportunity. To them, the hardships are nothing more than just stepping stones to a fuller life and a brighter future, just like James described in James chapter 1 and verses 2 and 3. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. In some texts, you'll read, produces endurance. It gives us the capacity to stand under even greater trials. Even as every trial can bring more grace. You may disagree with me, and if you do, that's okay. But when observing the lives of others, I see that some have an unnecessary, habitual attitude of no can do. It's not going to happen. It's impossible. No matter the circumstances, even when eating rainbow pie with a silver spoon, they'll probably just get sick from eating it anyway. And others refuse to dwell in that cesspool of despair. And when circumstances are their worst, optimistic souls still look up and thank God for the strength and the health. And even if they don't have the strength or the health, the rise above it. But it is not within our power to survey the lives of the worst pessimist or the brightest optimist. All we can do is look within ourselves. And when we evaluate why some people are eternal optimists or forever pessimists, let's just look at ourselves and consider the life of one person, contradicted by all of his brothers, transported to a foreign land, sold into slavery. And even though Joseph experienced all of that and the injustices that came by being a foreigner in a foreign land, Joseph was still more than a conqueror. Perhaps it started a generation before Joseph's father, Jacob, married his mother, Rachel. There might have been a little animosity between her and Jacob's other wife, Leah. Furthermore, Joseph was born as the oldest son to Rachel, the wife that Jacob loved, and perhaps the only one that he truly wanted. Rachel was Jacob's favorite. In fact, she was so favorite that even her children were the favorites of Jacob. Joseph received considerable benefits by his father Jacob, and in some very striking ways. Do you remember reading about the coat of many colors in chapter 37 of the book of Genesis? In verse 3, the Bible says, "Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children." It seems as though he's saying more than all of them combined, because he was the son of his old age. Well, there was another one of his old age. There was Benjamin. But yet Joseph is the one that's mentioned. Also, he made for him a tunic of many colors. It might as well have been a neon sign flashing to his brothers, "My dad loves me more than you." And what more could there have been that would have caused division among his brothers and the animosity that Joseph faced? Joseph didn't work in the fields or the flocks like his brothers did. In fact, he was the one that was sent to check on them. So you can imagine the kind of jealousy they felt. Joseph had dreams that implied his rule over the other family members, and that they would someday bow down to him. That had to fan the flames of the hostility more than any flashing neon sign of a tunic. The special treatment that Joseph received only made his brothers resent him more. But Joseph's explanation of the dreams did nothing to improve his relationship with them. And if you haven't already read the story, you'll be surprised how his brothers vented their resentment. On one occasion, Jacob sent Joseph on his brothers as they sent Jacob to check on his brothers as they tended the flocks. And after having some difficulty locating them, the brothers saw him coming and they plotted his demise. They said, "Here comes the dreamer." And the narrative of the events continues in Genesis chapter 37, beginning in verse 18. Now when they saw him afar off, even before he came near them, they conspired against him to kill him. Then they said to one another, "Look, this dreamer is coming. Come therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit, and we shall say some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what will become of his dreams." But Reuben heard it. He was the oldest of the brothers, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, "Let us not kill him." Now, before you jump to conclusions thinking that Reuben at least loved his brother Joseph, continue reading. You might think that his brothers were entirely evil, and only one brother out of the 11, Reuben, had any kind of consideration for Joseph such that he he tried to spare Joseph's life. At least that's not what you might think by reading a few verses. But in chapter 37 and verse 24, Reuben's plan was something else. Then they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. It seems like Reuben's plan was just to let him die rather than kill him actively. Perhaps he intended to release him later, but he didn't stick around long enough for that to happen. The pit seems to have been the beginning of one hardship after another for Joseph. But Joseph took them all in stride, and he manifested the kind of faith that is quite rare, and perhaps even more rare in this day. We face trials, and it seems like the devil at times brings them to cause the most trouble at the most inopportune time. But remember that time is not random, but it is used by God to accomplish his purpose in our lives. Genesis chapter 37, verse 28. It just so happened about that time that there was some traders coming by. The Midianite traders passed by, so the brothers pulled Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. And verse 36 in that chapter says, now the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, and the captain of the guard. After Reuben left, the brothers saw a caravan of traders on the way to Egypt, and it seemed like their only motivation was hatred for Joseph. But it goes beyond that. It's worse than that. Not only were they hateful toward Joseph, they were also greedy, and so they ended up kidnapping him and trafficking him to traders that were on their way to Egypt, a great distance away. I suppose that Reuben's plan might have been that these Midianite traders were coming. He may have known that, and that was the reason to put him in the pit, so that Joseph would be preserved at least as goods to be sold when the traders arrived. But to hide their actions, the brothers took Joseph's coat of many colors, dipped it in lamb's blood, and showed it to their father and said that he was killed by a wild animal. So adding insult to insult, Joseph's brothers did one dirty deed after another, even depriving their father of the truth about what had happened to Joseph. All the while, Joseph must have had time to think about his future while he was in the pit. And that's the way it is for us. When we're in some hardship, it gives us time to think. Unfortunately, though, we usually think on discouraging thoughts and why we're in such a terrible situation and why God hasn't helped us out of it. But I wonder if Joseph knew ahead of time that he would have to learn a new language, learn new customs and new laws, and essentially learn new everything. His life serving Potiphar, the captain of Pharaoh's guard, brought a whole new series of challenges. Joseph had to grow up, not as a rich man's son, not as the favored son that was loved more than all the other brothers. No, in Potiphar's house, he would just be a slave. But he proved himself to be a quick study, quite responsible, extremely resourceful, and utterly trustworthy. Because God was with Joseph, everything that Joseph touched turned to gold. God blessed Joseph such that Potiphar put Joseph in charge of everything that he owned. Genesis chapter 39, verse 3 and 4. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had, he put under his authority. When Joseph was put in charge, Potiphar didn't even know what he owned. Just as the situation was starting to look very hopeful for Joseph, Potiphar's evil wife stepped into the place of Joseph's evil brothers, and she was attracted to Joseph and continually tried to seduce him. She persisted until one day she found Joseph alone in the house, and having resisted her advances, she took hold of Joseph's robe as he tried to flee and used the garment to say that Joseph tried to rape her, and she screamed to the other servants, building a case to bring an injustice against Joseph, who had resisted her advances. Chapter 39 in Genesis, verse 20. Then Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. Now imagine, Joseph was there, alone in a foreign country, not his first language. He had to have been seen as different. The cushy lifestyle at Potiphar's house was now gone, and Joseph found himself a victim of lies and injustice. Can you imagine Joseph's sense of hurt and disappointment for being punished for something he would never have done? There in prison, he demonstrated the same resourcefulness and trustworthiness. Instead of being discouraged and in despair, all that he did as the prison trustee went so well that he was soon put in charge of the entire prison. Genesis 39, 22. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. In a sense, Joseph was now the prison keeper. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was put under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him. Are you starting to get the picture that Joseph had quite a reputation? He had done things right. He was a man of integrity. He was a man of faith. And in his demonstration of those characteristics, others began to trust him. Maybe that's what Jesus meant. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Joseph glorified God even in Potiphar's house, even in the prison. But he was still in prison. And how optimistic could a person possibly be there? Maybe one could hope to be let out, but it seemed there was no one to plead Joseph's case. Time passed, and it seemed that there was a plot on Pharaoh's life. There were two suspects, Pharaoh's baker and Pharaoh's butler. They were placed in the royal prison during the investigation, and while there, they came under Joseph's care. One day, Joseph noted that both individuals were quite upset, and when inquiring, they had both revealed troubling dreams. Joseph told them the meaning of their dreams and asked that when the butler was let go from prison, that the butler remember him. The butler was later restored to his position, but Joseph was not remembered until such a time. The butler was released and forgot all about Joseph until one day when things began to look up for Joseph. But let me make some observations about Joseph's optimism in prison. He thought he would be released, and that was the reason he asked the butler to remember him. Oh, there were no lawyers that could bring a case for Joseph while he was in prison. There wasn't anyone who would approach Pharaoh on Joseph's behalf. As far as everyone else was concerned, Joseph was a foreigner, a nobody, maybe not even considered a human. But if Joseph thought he was going to die in prison, he probably would have retreated within himself. But that is not what he did. He continued doing the best that he could do at everything, no matter what situation he was in. And there had to be some deeply seated spiritual values to sustain Joseph throughout the injustices that were levied against him. And the reason why he did this, the reason why he reacted to adversity in the way that he did, is the same reason why every person reacts to adversity in a positive way, because they trust in God. Joseph's knowledge of God and his faith in God gave him armor to survive the protracted sequence of spiritual potholes. Meanwhile, back in Egypt, Pharaoh had a dream that troubled him, and there wasn't anybody that Pharaoh knew that could tell him what the dream meant. He couldn't make heads or tails out of it. But when the butler heard about the dream that Pharaoh had, then he remembered someone else who told him about a dream that he had had. Joseph was called before Pharaoh. And another text illustrates the degree to which Joseph optimistically trusted God. Genesis chapter 41, verse 15. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. But I have heard it said that you can understand a dream to interpret it." So Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, "It is not me. I'm not the one. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace." There was nothing ever that happened in Joseph's life that made him think it was all about his strength and his knowledge and his ability. What happens with us? We do something good and people pat us on the back or give us an award. They say something good about us and they think that it's all about what we did. When Jesus said, "Let your light so shine," he wasn't talking about us taking the credit. No. Whenever something good happens and somebody tries to give us an award, we should say, "Let God have the glory. The only reason I did that was because of my faith in God. I was only able to do that because of God's grace. I could only accomplish that because of what God has blessed me with." That was Joseph's attitude. And that should be the attitude of everyone who trusts in God. The ruler of Egypt told Joseph his dreams, and Joseph told Pharaoh what they meant and what to do to prepare for the terrible famine that was going to come on Egypt, so that the people of Egypt would not only be able to endure, they would be able to survive, but they would be able to help people from all over the world to survive. Genesis chapter 41, beginning in verse 25. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one." The crops were going to produce for 7 years. They were going to produce abundantly. And so Joseph was saying that these seven cows that had eaten the grain, the reason they were so fat was because Egypt's ground had been blessed and produced so much. And then he said, "And the seven thin and ugly cows which came up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty heads blighted by the east wind are 7 years of famine. Indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, 7 years of famine will arise. And all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will deplete the land." It wasn't enough to know that there would be seven good years followed by seven bad ones. Joseph gave the ruler of Egypt the kind of advice that can only come from divinely inspired prophets. And Joseph was considered a prophet. Genesis 41, verse 34. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land to collect one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the seven plentiful years, and let them gather all of the food of those good years that are coming, and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. Verse 36, that the land may not perish during the famine. Being in touch with God, Joseph was given a position as the second most powerful man in the world. And I could argue the most powerful man in the world, because Pharaoh only bore the title and had nothing, no knowledge at all about what Joseph was actually doing, because Joseph wielded all the power. By divine revelation, Joseph was the savior of the world during the greatest disaster that took place at the height of Egypt's glory. And simultaneously, Joseph saved the global population that was so dependent on Egypt's breadbasket. Most importantly, God used Joseph to preserve the people of Israel, for during the times of that famine was when Israel and 120 souls migrated down to Egypt, so that sometime in the future they would be able to receive the promise of Abraham that had been given long before. We are far removed from that time period, some 4,000 years ago, when God spoke through the voice of Joseph, but that voice still rings in our ears. The record of Scripture calls out to everyone who faces some difficulty, some health problem, some major legal letdown. There's Joseph's words that keep telling us not to let the troubles and trials be bricks on our backs as we're slaves in a field somewhere. No, the spiritual allegory that is in the book of Genesis is a lesson teaching us that we don't have to be slaves to sin and the death that it brings. We have been delivered from the land of bondage. Read again the words of Joseph when he was reunited with his brothers and explained to them what all this meant. Genesis chapter 50, verse 20. But as for you, looking back on the time when you threw me into the pit and sold me to Midianite slave traders, you meant it against me for evil. God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day, to save many people alive. I don't know of anyone who has experienced a similar sequence of tragic events like Joseph did. Perhaps there was Job in the Old Testament. A few of us may have experienced difficulties that have lasted for years, but none of us have suffered in prison from injustice like Joseph has. But if we learn from the life of Joseph and the faith that he had, in whatever trial we find ourselves, we should have faith to be hopeful for the future. I remember the words given to the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 8 and verse 28, when the Apostle received the words from God, and we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. It could be that a lot of people that you care about are going to pass away before you do and leave you lonely for a time. Maybe for some of us a long time. Perhaps your marriage will experience ups and downs. Maybe even the devil will do his worst when it comes to your marriage. Your children may bring you heartbreak or disappointment. You may have to move to some place you don't want to move to because of a job or the economy. It's highly possible that your life will be an economic roller coaster and even sit at the loading station for an extended period of time. It may be that some of us will live with the consequences of some terrible decision that we made early in life, and we just can't escape it. But every day of our lives, we can choose to get through it by looking up and not let discouragement beat us down into that pit where we'll be a slave to sin. We don't have to discourage ourselves more by imagining how much worse things are going to get. For Joseph, Egypt wasn't so much a land of bondage as it was a land of opportunity. And even more, as a land where God demonstrated his mighty power to save. The reason for the faith that Joseph had was and the reason for the strength of his godly character is that he believed what God was telling him. And may our faith in God and our resolve to keep trusting in his matchless grace sustain us through the times of our adversity that we might endure. Israel was in Egypt for 400 years. But God's people didn't stay there. He sent a deliverer to free them from their bondage. And when Moses came to Pharaoh and said, "Let my people go," it was the mighty hand of God that brought the people of Israel out of that land of bondage. While in the bondage to sin, God sent Jesus, our deliverer. And Jesus came to release us from that spiritual prison in which we were being held. And now we can say that we are free at last. At various stages of our lives, we may be thrown into a pit of despair or feel like a slave or be tempted in ways like Joseph was. But no matter what happens, remember that God has a purpose for our lives. And the trials that we face will bring about a greater purpose. So let us trust God and follow his word, and we will be lifted up. If you're within the sound of my voice and you need to draw near to God, then reach out to me while we stand and while we sing the song of encouragement.